Level Up Life with Patrick Felicia, the podcast about learning, education, and change. Before we get into this episode, I'd like to invite you to join this community to hear more interviews that will help you to understand how games can be used for learning and change. All I want you to do is to click on the subscribe button. Thank you for your support, and thank you for subscribing. It means the world to me. Today, we are welcoming Clark Aldrich. Clark is changing the trajectory of education. As a leading analyst, he founded Gartner's e-learning coverage and jump-started the adoption of distributed learning by the world's largest organizations. He is the author of 6 books, including Unschooling Rules, which empowered the trend of student-centric micro-schools. Now, his work on short sims is making educational media relevant for preparing students and employees to take leadership roles in a skills-based economy. In this interview, Clark will tell us a bit more about himself, his journey, and how he thinks that short sims can support education, training, and motivation. So the format of this interview consists in 5 questions for which the answers should really help people to understand more about the field of games and learning. So let's dive in. Hi, it's great to have you here for this interview.
Patrick, really happy to be here and look forward to diving in.
Such a pleasure to have you here. I think it's going to be great. So let's start. Can you tell us about your journey, how you got started in your field, and what pivotal moments led you to where you are today?
Thank you. That's a great question. I think my journey had multiple steps to it. I think as most of them do. As a youngster, I went to some of the best schools in the country. I went to Ivy League University. But before that, I went to a very good boarding school. And then before that, a very good boys' day school in the Boston suburbs. I had some wonderful teachers and professors. I had some, obviously great friends. But the approach to education always bothered me. I mean, like most kids, I asked a lot of the time, why am I learning this? What's the point of teaching this? And got some unsatisfactory answers, as we all do. But also, again, just that constant realization that although these are some of the best schools in the country, what they were doing with us all day long just didn't make sense to me as a youngster. The other thing, though, is I went to one of the best camps in the United States, Camp Chwonky, and that was run both as a camper, but also as a counselor. I spent 4 years in each, and in all those 8 years, it was run by a guy named Tim Ellis, who was an expat of a prestigious being a headmaster at a prestigious New England prep school, and he believed, and rightfully so, that he could do more to develop youngsters, boys such as myself, in 2 months or 2.5 months of summer camp than one could at 9.5 or 10 months of school. And so he had a very progressive approach to boys' education, again, a lot of learning by doing, a lot of focusing on the entire individual, not just the narrow curriculum. And he was very inspiring for me in terms of thinking about education more broadly than perhaps the curricula of the prep schools. After school, I went and joined Xerox, and I was hired by the number 2 person to be his speechwriter. So it was a great opportunity to see the top of an organization immediately, to go right from school to the top of an organization and see what skills were actually valued and paid well for, as opposed to the schools I learned, which, by the way, no correlation. But one event that struck me as being a particularly interesting one was there's something called a document symposium. So Xerox was looking at sort of long-term strategies. And what they did is they gathered the top 250 managers for 2 days of lectures. And what they did is they brought in some of the best speakers in the world. I mean, the best-selling authors, the best academicians, just the absolute AAA money is no object, speaking fee money is no object, bringing in for 2 days of absolute, you know, superstar presentations. And the first hour was great. Second hour was great. By the third hour, every single person in that audience, all 250 executives, were fidgeting. And they were they were writing notes to each other. They were not listening. And it really occurred to me, you had the best presenters in the world in the cushiest environment possible, with the most motivated people, sort of the not the smartest people, but certainly some of the most accomplished people. And they couldn't make the classroom model work. They couldn't make a day of lecture work. So what chance do sort of the rest of us have in pulling off? So it's fundamentally that this is a flawed model. I then left Xerox and went to Gartner. And at Gartner, I launched their e-learning coverage. And so sort of launched that. So I work with a lot of the world's largest organizations making the transition from, you know, classroom. And by classroom, I mean, you know, everyone who was within half an hour of corporate headquarters got training and no one else did. And maybe we had the retreat, you know, corporate retreats where you'd spend 2 weeks, you know, intensively training something in like Leesburg or something, but, to this whole e-learning model. And so it was a very heady time. It was sort of a very exciting time. But at the end of the day, no matter how good an organization was, the quality of the content itself was still kind of, you know, basically PowerPoint slides. And again, having been a speechwriter, I think I know PowerPoint slides just about as well as anyone. So then I did some pilots on gamification. I grew up playing computer games. So I saw computer games as a huge opportunity to make content more engaging. But there's two parts of games that are interesting. One of them is inherently sort of the zippy fun fireworks and the quick explosions and the superficial stuff. And that was less interesting to me than the actual notion of interactivity, of learning through interactions rather than learning, you know, traditional content that was interactive. And so I made a big difference between them. But my own gamification efforts were overshadowed by a lot of other gamification efforts of sort of making things sort of more zippy and exciting, while basically perfuming the pig. So that was Gartner. And then I left Gartner to do some of my own simulations, and I won Best Product of the Year with one of my simulations called Virtual Leader, and won a lot of other awards for them. So yay. But it was hard to perpetuate it. So even sort of the big simulations that I made were hard to perpetuate and update because the programmers left and all that stuff. So it was a great showcase, but it was not a perpetual model. And then I did something a little different from a normal career path. I spent about a year and a half talking to a lot of unschooling families and homeschooling families with two basic questions. And one question I had for them was, what do schools do that's just stupid, that makes no sense at all? And the other one is, what don't schools do that they should? And from those conversations, I created a book called Unschooling Rules, which is a very brief, unlike the book before it that was, you know, 600 pages. This one was probably, you know, 80 pages of a big font and small pages. But just some sort of a reflection about everything schools were doing wrong. And part of that came from when I was at Xerox, David T. Kearns, who was a very successful CEO of Xerox, tried really hard to sort of reform education, wrote a book called Winning the Brain Race, but that didn't go anywhere, and a bunch of other efforts as well. So we had infinitely smart people, or infinitely smarter than I was people, failing in making an impact on education, which was impactful for me because I wanted to make a change, and certainly I wasn't going to be more successful than they were. So that was kind of interesting. As well. So in Unschooling Rules, I sort of wanted to kind of create a summary of everything that schools did wrong, or a lot of things schools did wrong, and a summary of sort of an opportunity to move forward. But almost in sort of it wasn't meant as school reform. It was just meant as thinking reform. And almost, if you want to understand why schools, you know, fail, then Unschooling Rules became a nice tool for doing that. What surprised me is a bunch of individuals took the book and actually moved ahead with it. And so a lot of these student-centric micro schools that have popped up have all come, you know, with Unschooling Rules as being one of the books that they read early on, sort of motivate them to do something different. So what turned, you know, what started off as a book that was not meant to be taught or not meant to be helpful, other than just sort of a reflection, ended up being a lot more influential than I ever imagined it would be in sort of, you know, motivating schools. So then the final sort of step on my journey was still coming back to simulations, believing that the notion of simulations was really important, and getting kids thinking about learning to do, not just learning to know. And then creating a framework, which again, I called Short Sims, that is a way that schools and corporations can create content around learning how to do something, not just learning how to know something. And so that was, you know, the final step for me, the creation of the Short Sims pedagogy that, you know, made me very, very, very excited to move forward of saying, okay, I now have an answer. I don't just understand the problem, but I have a very substantial answer that I can now advocate and create for organizations. So finally, after 20 years, I can now approach a corporation or a school with an answer, not just a great question.
What are the core principles or philosophies that guide your work and your approach in your field?
It's a great question. What are my core principles? So I think one of my big core principles is failure is not an option. And that sounds, you know, arrogant or obnoxious or something. But truly, like, what happens if you approach schools? I mean, because so many people approach education and, you know, become noble failures. They don't achieve anything, but they said, oh, I fought the good fight. And so I'm trying to challenge myself not to accept failure as an option. I'm not making myself do it quickly, but I am trying to say, I really, really want to help solve this problem. I believe this problem is worth solving. So one core principle is failure is not an option. Another core principle is I don't want to worry about the business model of my solution. I've been offered, but I've not taken any VC money. I've been offered to work for organizations that have a legacy offering, which I did not want to get tied to. So as much as possible, I wanted to not encumber myself as I'm looking for a solution to education. I did not want to have a prescribed, you know, model in place. I did not want to have a business model. I did not want to have a tax put on everything I do. I did not want to limit my own flexibility. So I wanted freedom. And so I built a life that was relatively inexpensive. I did not staff up prematurely because, again, if it's just simply, if I make a mistake, then I have to work a weekend or two work late or work early, which is fine. I'm happy to do that, rather than, go out of business or something. So really important part is minimum encumbrance. And part of that is following, you know, trying to create a world where I can just truly follow the opportunity. The last sort of core principle I have is trying to be cross-industry. I did not want to be just military, even though I could have been. I did not want to be just medical, even though I could have been. I did not want to be just academic or just nonprofit or just corporation, although I could have been all of those things. So part of another core principle is saying I need to move back and forth between communities to take the best of each. Not just sort of, you know, not accept the limitations of each.
Can you share some insights into your current projects or areas of focus? And also tell us what's keeping you excited and motivated in your work right now?
So current focus. So I believe short sims are the answer. I believe short sims are a major opportunity to reboot education, to rethink what learning is at the absolute core foundational level, and to do so in a way that is flexible, that is expandable, that doesn't, you know, that has no rate limiting aspect to it. There's no gate to short sims. The technology itself is out there. It's non-proprietary. The methodology itself, the pedagogy, is non-proprietary. Anyone can make a short sim. So the opportunity is there to truly, truly, blow it out. So right now, my current focus is to increase the number of people who are making short sims, which is why I have my workshop, increase the number of organizations who are buying short sims and successfully implementing them, which is why I have my short sim business, shortsims.com. And my current focus then is saying, how can I get to 10,000 short sims out there? I think once there are 10,000 short sims out in the world, short sims become permanent. They become simply how school works. And so my biggest question, my biggest focus is saying, how do I get to 10,000 short sims being produced and being used? So that's my current focus, and I'm doing pretty well. I think we're getting closer to that to the thousands number.
What do you believe are the most pressing or intriguing challenges or trends in your field at the moment, and how are you addressing them?
The most pressing issue. I think the most pressing trend, the most pressing issue, is that today education is rudderless. I think there's very, if you get five people together in a room and ask them what the goal of education is, they're not going to agree. Therefore, there's no such thing as metrics around education. If we can't agree to the goal of education, then how can we possibly agree to the metrics around evaluating our goal? And a lot of people who are loud about education are either advocating the current approach to education and defending it, circling the wagon, or are attacking it just sort of instinctively. Education's bad, and now let's tear it apart. So I think the rudderlessness, it's hard to find someone who can speak up for education in a coherent way. And then I think there's a lot of bad. I mean, I think education is horrifically unfair. It really hurts a lot of people. It really hurts a lot of again, if you are a great project manager, if you are a great leader, if you are, again, let's say you're a highly charismatic person, you're very good at motivating people. You're very good at finding people's strengths and creating projects that align to their strengths or whatever. Schools, I mean, you know, what are you going to do in school? You're going to be a class clown. You're going to be a troublemaker. You're going to have to change who you are in order to succeed, or you're going to fail. And then you're going to be this charismatic person who failed at school. So schools are horrifically unfair. And in some cases, I think they're increasingly being seen as a way of, you know, the more money you have, the better off you do in school. And then you go there and you evolve society to take advantage of school trained people. So I think you have a lot of negative spirals. So I think education, again, is a disaster. And all this stuff like AI is a distraction. I mean, sure, it's relevant. It hurts the traditional mission of schools in a good way. It sort of, you know, makes a lot of stuff that schools used to teach irrelevant. But again, that's just a, you know, that's just a symptom of a greater problem. So I think the notion of an aligning mission, aligning goal. Certainly for me, I have a goal, which is the goal of education is to help people understand where they are world class. Everyone is good at something. Everyone is probably world class at something, whether it's accounting or whether it's building stone walls or whether it's figuring out chemicals, chemical interactions, or whether it's whatever. So everyone is really, really good at something, and a lot of people are good at a bunch of things. And we also all have missions. We all have things that we care immensely about, whether it's feeding the poor or helping animals or getting to Mars or whatever. You know, we all have stuff we care immensely about. And so the goal of schools, maybe the only goal of education in general, is saying, how can we help people find their talent? How can we help people find their missions? And then how can we connect the two? How can we help them connect the two so that they can make money and grow and become more fulfilled people? And that, you know, that's the goal of education. And so, you know, right now, until we have this aligning vision of education, we're just going to keep being at each other's throats. Once we come up with an aligning vision, again, I think mine is better than any that I've heard so far, but obviously I'm flexible. Then we can start moving ahead towards that goal and motivating it. So I think that is sort of the biggest pressing problem in education today.
If you could give one piece of advice or share one key lesson that you have learned throughout your career, what would it be?
One piece of advice would be, it's the media, stupid. Education comes down to media. And if it's passive media like lectures, if it's passive media like books or workbooks or writing term papers, as long as it's that way, then school is going to become continue to be a boring slog fest. And we have to rethink what educational media looks like. And that's where short sims come in. Short sims, you know, the basic element of short sims is you want to do something, you make a decision, you do it, you're either right or wrong. If you're wrong, you get feedback, and then you can sort of calibrate and move on from there. And these skills build on each other. So it's the media, stupid, when it comes to education reform. But that also means that you have to be willing to hack the tools. So a lot of these tools, like course authoring tools are designed for a flawed model of education. So you have to become smart enough and competent enough and confident enough to take some of your authoring tools and kind of push them in ways they weren't meant to do. And so it's like, you know, you can add graphics where graphics aren't supposed to happen. You know, and so in a lot of cases, you're doing some really bizarre stuff that's, you know, tedious at times and boring at times. But as long, you know, if you're willing to do that towards your vision, then I think you really can hack your way to creating some really, really superb educational media.
Well, thank you so much for your presentation. I really appreciated it. And I think many people will enjoy that and will actually find information that they can actually use in practical terms in their projects. So again, thank you very much. If the listeners want to get in touch with you or discover more about your work, where should they go to? I mean, do you have any email or a site where they can learn more about you?
Thank you so much. It's a great interview. Really, really appreciate it. If people want to learn more about what I'm doing, go to shortsims.com, www.shortsims.com. Play some examples of Short Sims. There's a great workshop. If you want to sign up for that, that gets you your Short Sim certificate, and also gets you building your first Short Sim. And that really is necessary, I think, to understand what we're talking about.
Thanks again for accepting this interview. And again, it was very, very interesting. And I hope and trust that our listeners will really enjoy that.
Patrick, you know, I really enjoyed this as well. I really appreciate the opportunity and I greatly look forward to the next steps. Good job.
That's it. Thanks very much. And I'll talk to you on the next interview. Bye bye.